This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Good morning, folks. Hope you're having a great day thus far. It is beautiful outside. A little chilly, a little frigid, but the sun is out. Really a gorgeous day. We got a great lineup for you today. Rafael Goyeneche, President, Metropolitan Crime Commission. We got a number of issues that we're going to talk about. Crime stats. We'll talk about concealed carry. We'll talk about the Burrell-Hebert case, the Mid-City murder of Zelda Townsend at kind of sent shockwaves through Mid-City and where we are with that. At 11:30, Hans von Spakovsky, senior legal fellow at the Heritage, AGs from 14 states challenged the authority of billionaire Elon Musk and his Department of Government Efficiency, otherwise known as DOGE, to access sensitive government database and exercise, according to some, virtually unchecked power. And that's the allegations that they made in a lawsuit Thursday. California, Connecticut, Hawaii, Maryland, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Nevada, New Mexico, Oregon, Rhode Island, Vermont, and Washington. They all have a lot in common, otherwise known as blue states. Meg Ferris, WWL-TV medical reporter, joins us. She'll talk about her hour-long in-depth talk show podcast about health and lifestyle and the differences as to what she can bring to the public and to the audience in that medium as opposed to television. The Port of New Orleans show will visit with Melanie Montrall. She is actually the Harbor Police Chief, and they played a critical role in providing security during the Super Bowl and in many other events as well. And I think you'll be surprised as to the breadth and depth of what they do. We'll start out this morning. Every year at the beginning of the year, the Quinnipiac poll comes out, and this one was pretty ugly for Democrats. And it's interesting. They're reeling. They're trying to figure out what is going on. On the other side of the aisle, Republicans are really happy. Many have said the following. It's a sobering slapdown of historic proportions. The poll found that only 21% of voters said they approved of the job that Democrats are doing in Congress. That is an all-time low. While 40% of voters said they approved of the job Republicans are doing in Congress, that is an all-time high. The poll first started asking these questions in 2009. Now, Trump's favorability rating dropped 1 point from January. His disapproval rating spiked 6 points from January in the same time frame. The president got high marks from voters on immigration, the economy, and foreign policy. But two things, he was underwater. And I talked about this yesterday, so it's interesting that this validates what I said. He said he's underwater on the Ukraine war and on the policy related to Israel and the Gaza Strip. I warned yesterday that he might want to be careful. his dialogue and rhetoric going back and forth with Volodymyr Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, is not going to bode well for him. Given the choice of Zelensky or Putin, it is apparent to me that this country picks Zelensky overwhelmingly. And there is a growing disdain and distrust for Vladimir Putin. In fact, this same poll revealed that 81% of voters said Russian Federation President Vladimir Putin should not be trusted by the U.S. President Trump's kind of signaled that he was siding with Russia against Ukraine on Wednesday when he took out after Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, the ongoing war, saying that he was a mediocre comedian at best and he's a dictator whose country happens to be under martial law, and that's why that they have suspended elections at this point in time. One might ask whether or not, if Donald Trump was in the same position, whether he would do the same thing. I'm not a betting man, but I would bet that that's exactly what Donald Trump would do. And there are legitimate reasons for doing it, about the safety and security of the country, that a transition period at this point in time in the midst of a war, where how could they legitimately conduct an election while bombs, drones, planes, missiles, and other things are in the skies of Ukraine? And they're having to fight back. In my view, it's kind of an idiotic statement. But what's interesting about the results of this poll is I think the vast majority of people side with Ukraine. And he's going to have to tiptoe through the tulips very carefully on this issue, or he is going to lose public support. And he has actually put Republicans in a box, many of whom are pro-Ukrainian. Many of whom have in recent history trashed the dictator Vladimir Putin, trashed the archaic ways that this individual carries out his business. They're not worried about humanitarian concerns at all. And these same Republicans are going to be tasked with trying to defend this new found Trump policy. I don't think it's going to go very well, that this is just going to be, well, this is just one of those ways that Donald Trump is going to negotiate. This is how he does it. He's done it in the past and he's going to do it this time. Well, you know, what's interesting about Volodymyr Zelensky is he's not going to wait around. In fact, he didn't. He approached the UAE, who have a complete total disdain for Russia and its Russian leaders. And they signed a deal. They signed a trade deal, one that's fairly lucrative to Ukraine and will provide revenue streams here in the short term, in the midterm. Very smart on his part. He's not going to wait around and be jerked around by a nose ring by Donald Trump. Foreign policy has a tendency of being a lot more complicated than that. It's not something that should be debated, articulated, a dialogue created on Truth Social. That's not the appropriate place. The appropriate place would be to get on the phone with the president of Ukraine. Now, Trump is complaining about the Ukrainian president not wanting to sign the deal as it relates to the rare earth minerals. President Zelensky articulates, I think, a very significant concern. There are no guarantees about providing security for that country moving forward. One might want to ask President Trump, if the roles were reversed, would he sign that agreement? Again, I'm not a betting man, but I would bet against him signing that agreement. I don't think he would do it. for the very same reasons as articulated by the president of Ukraine. It's basically not worth the paper it's written on. It's one-sided, it's one way, and it's all about being compensated for the dollars spent in Ukraine in rare earth minerals, with no guarantees of any future support or otherwise. None of this aid was previously contingent upon anything. And we shouldn't just step over the thought process that this president in Ukraine is willing to sign such a deal, to understand that there are financial considerations that the U.S. has as well, and there are concerns that they should be made whole. It doesn't seem as though he's opposed to that, but he wants some guarantees from the U.S. that the relationship, acting as an ally, supporting Ukraine in the future, is still intact. We have been completely frustrated with foreign policy as we transition from one administration to another. Now, I recognize that there's going to be ideological differences as to how we approach it. I was not a big fan as to how President Biden approached it. I get it. But we always have to be mindful, in my view, that the entity's interest always outweighs the individual. The entity being the USA, the country. Our posture. We can't go around poo-pooing on previous administrations just for the sake of the poo-poo. It doesn't work that way. That doesn't work in the best interest of the entity. They took us down a road based on trust. The easiest way to violate that trust is to discard everything that was previously done without working through a transition period with the recipient, our ally, who we were working with. And if we have individuals in the White House or otherwise that don't understand that, they're just ignorant. And that's why we lose the faith of our allies in Europe and otherwise, because we just cannot discard this on a whim. It's not that simple. Things tend to be very complicated. We have spent hundreds of billions of dollars this endeavor. We have tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people killed. We have an entire country that has been destroyed. We provided aid previously with a whole list of conditions. We tied the Ukrainians' hands behind their back. And now they find themselves in a position where they're kind of down and out, and we want to blame it on them? If we would have allowed them to act in the same fashion as their enemy, the Russians, the landscape today would be entirely different. Who knows? Maybe we'd have Ukrainians inside of Russia. Deep inside of Russia. Because when things changed for just a little bit, they were able to accomplish same and hold on to that territory for quite a long period of time. But to say you've been involved for 3 years and you could have struck a deal, what deal is there to be struck? The Russians invade, the Russians bomb. Oh, let's go to a negotiation, and let's go to the table, so that I can give you some of my land to make you happy and bring an end to this. What? In my view, in fact, accepting anything less than going back to the original territory in 2014 is not. If we don't demand that, then we lose. We're less than. Russia's more than. We would be rewarding bad behavior, and this guy has indicated over and over again he has no problem engaging in bad behavior. He gets away with it. He's playing a different game than we're playing. And we need to recognize that. And why would you forecast what you're willing to give up on the front end? And why would you alienate your ally during the process to try and extract something more for this country out of Russia? It's just absolutely crazy. Now, a lot of folks are saying, oh, well, Newell, you really don't know what's going on behind closed doors. I tell you what I do know is that 81% of the voters said Russian Federation President Vladimir Putin should not be trusted by the U.S. Now, there's a delicate balance here when you're dealing with foreign policy. You got to make sure that the people at home understand exactly what's happening, because you're going to lose their trust. You're going to lose their confidence. And yes, you're only in office for 4 years. But maybe you should be concerned about the following 4 years, that there be another Republican in that office. You can blow it all up all you want. But if you don't have the confidence of the voting public, you have very little. But we'll take a wait and see, and we'll see what happens. But the course that it's on right now, with Zelensky not waiting, and I don't blame him, he shouldn't be patient. He should be very impatient about this, because there's not even a whole lot of communication about what's going on. Those are his words. So he runs and cuts a deal with UAE. The interesting thing is who's the next deal going to be with? And maybe that's something that we should be concerned about. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby.
If you enjoy football, football,
be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
Subscribe on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Saints training camp has released some news. Head coach Kellen Moore has hired Doug Nussmeier as the offensive coordinator. Everyone thought that this was going to happen, and it has been finalized. 54-year-old Nussmeier comes to the Saints from the Philadelphia Eagles, where he served as quarterback's coach under Moore last season. They shared some time together, both with the Los Angeles Chargers as well as the Dallas Cowboys. And Moore also was offensive coordinator at a number of colleges, to include Alabama, Florida, Michigan, and he just so happens to have a famous son, Garrett Nussmeier, who is the LSU starting quarterback. So please welcome Mr. Nussmeier to be the new Saints offensive coordinator. Folks, you don't always hear about a lot of what the Port Authority does. And earlier this year, or towards the end of last year, I thought it was important to spend a little time on this show, at least once a month, to talk about the Port of New Orleans, because of the contributions that they have to our economy here, the importance of same. And I recognize, by receiving a bunch of texts, about people knew very little about the port. So we decided to set aside some time in order to share with you the internal operations of the Port of New Orleans and what they do and the breadth and depth of what's out there. In fact, they took me on a tour of the facilities, and it's absolutely incredible the amount of bulk cargo they move through here, containers that they move through here, tires, agricultural product. I mean, I could go on for another 20 minutes about what actually moves through the Port of New Orleans. With that are a ton of security concerns. And that's why the port has their own police department, and it's referred to as the Harbor Police Department, and the chief joins us, Melanie Montral. Chief, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Good morning.
So, Chief, I went through that because a lot of folks don't really understand what goes on at the port. They don't understand the size of the port, the importance of the security of the port. And y'all don't just end there. I know that we've stood side by side during my career with the Harbor Police for Mardi Gras, for almost every major event that ever came to the city, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We did stand side by side. We partner with all of the agencies, whether that's JPSO, NOPD, Gretna Police, Kenner Police, you know, as well as other state and federal partners. I mean, it's an intricate part of how we make everything work. So, yes, those partnerships are definitely important.
Now, you guys played a role during, obviously, the Super Bowl II. Describe that for us.
Yeah, so we did a couple of things for Super Bowl. One of the, you know, things that we did is we did partner with Troop NOLA. We are part of that task force to help secure different parts of the city, including the French Quarters. And another thing that we did was we stood up our Maritime Security Operations Center. And so what that did was that allow us to share intelligence with other federal, state, and local agencies. We had many agencies participate and be here as well, and that was U.S. Coast Guard, Customs and Border Patrol, HSI. We had different law enforcement agencies in here staffing that. So we can gather intelligence real-time, communicate that with other partner and agencies to make sure that anything that's happening along the river, anything that's happening within the immediate area that we had perimetered for the Super Bowl, that information can go out in real time to the officers in the field, as well as the other agencies participating in securing the city for the Super Bowl.
Because one of the challenges, and I don't know that y'all refer to it as a threat, but at any given point in time, there are a host of foreign vessels either approaching our port, in our port, or exiting our port, right?
Absolutely. I think that that is an important note. I don't think as many people realize that this really is critical infrastructure just because of what you said of, one, our proximity. You know, part of our jurisdiction is right under the Crescent City Connection. We have those ships coming in. So, yeah, that's an important consideration. We always do a SWOT analysis on, you know, what can we do better, what can we look at. And so that's always going to be a threat for us to make sure that, you know, we can secure the gateway as well as the surrounding areas.
Absolutely. And that's not to say that there's malintent, but you never know when things, systems are being manipulated that start in a foreign country that visit all kinds of different ports before they get to us, right?
Absolutely. I think, you know, the best way to describe it for us is we're always going to take a proactive approach. We're always going to be prepared to respond to any threats 24/7. I agree it doesn't always mean that it's malicious, but I think the events that took place, you know, on New Year's reminds us all that we can never be too cautious, and it's always good to be prepared to respond in the event of any type of, you know, national emergency.
And we do know that historically there has been said manipulation of systems where drugs come in through foreign vessels and otherwise, and in most cases that I recall, the shipping companies were even unaware of it. So you always have to stay on top of that. It goes up during some years. It goes down during others. It's not stable, but everyone's always looking for the path of least resistance as to what they can manipulate.
Absolutely. We have a great working relationship with our local U.S. Customs office, and that was an important part of standing up that Maritime Security Operations Center. So we can gather intelligence for things like that in real time, make a plan to try to, you know, mitigate anything that we deem to be a threat, or, as you stated, you know, whether that's someone trying to smuggle in drugs. That is a constant preparation for us, and that's why it's important we have those relationships with U.S. Coast Guard and the other agencies that are responsible in the area. It's how we have been successful.
Now, you guys, obviously everybody's deploying technologies. Are there any unique technologies that y'all are deploying in the MSOC, in the Maritime Security Operations Center?
So we are deploying a lot of resources that other agencies use, whether that is cameras or drones. The difference, the added bonus for us is we're deploying a lot as far as the river as well. We use a lot of systems to be able to track the vessel's movements, where they were, where they're going, the background information behind that. So that is an added piece that we are able to deploy and get that information out and make assessments based on everything that we have coming in.
One of the things that came up, and I don't know if y'all participated in this at all, I'm sure you had some say-so, you had a lot of private big yachts, vessels, have a desire to dock, I guess, at some of y'all's property. How challenging was that?
Well, we did have those vessels come in. They went through the proper channels just like everyone else. So, I mean, even though they're private yachts, we're still going to screen them. We're still going to make sure that the credentialing is proper. We're still going to, you know, get involved with who's coming in, when they're coming, where they're docking. So we were heavily involved in that, and it actually turned out to be a really good situation for the city. And, you know, we did secure those yachts at different locations throughout the port. But overall, you know, those companies contacted us well in advance so we can do our due diligence to make sure that they can come into the city as well.
A lot of people were asking, well, why didn't they go into the lake? And it's like, well, they draw too much water. The lake's not deep enough, right?
And I think, you know, honestly, I don't think people realize. So the proximity here was good for them to be in the vicinity of the Superdome. I don't think people realize that when you go into the lake, you actually have to go through the locks. So that can add 2 to 3 hours of commute time to try to get into the city. And that water is pretty rough on a day-to-day basis.
Absolutely. So it was kind of interesting. Now, a lot of what y'all deployed with this SEER rating, SEER 1 rating, the special event assessment rating for Mardi Gras being designated as a SEER 1 event, I guess a lot of what you did for Super Bowl is going to carry forward to Mardi Gras as well.
Absolutely. We will have officers in the quarters. We will have officers assigned to the task force. We'll have vessels in the river. We will have definitely the same layered approach that we did for the Super Bowl.
Any other thoughts?
No, we're just happy that you decided to shine a light on the port and, you know, the inner makings of what makes it all work, and, you know, just happy to be a part of that.
You know, Chief, if you could, when you think about the amount of territory that y'all cover, how big is that actually?
So we are responsible for 23 miles in 3 jurisdictions, Orleans, Jefferson, and St. Bernard. So we go a really long way going through multiple parishes. We are all the way out from Kenner to Violet.
Wow. So that is quite an expansive piece of property.
Absolutely.
And your authority, you are a state agency, is that correct?
Yes, we are a state agency, and we hold a state commission.
Yeah. Any other unique characteristics of the Harbor Police?
Well, I think the main thing that makes us unique is that in addition to our patrol division, which is the backbone of the agency, we are responsible for response on the river. So that's where the police boats come in. All of our police officers are trained not only in traditional policing practices, but they also are trained on maritime policing as well, which includes firefighting capabilities and different things. So that's what makes us unique, is that if it happens in the river within our jurisdiction, then, you know, whether that's a rescue, whether that's a recovery, anything that happens, that is an added addition to our everyday policing strategy.
Yeah, so you have a marine division and a land division for the most part then?
We do. We have a marine division, a patrol division that operates 24/7.
Yep. Absolutely. Well, Chief, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate your time, your insight, and sharing some of the activities that the Harbor Police are involved in. And we thank you for your collaboration and cooperation with so many other agencies in their time of need, because I think it is a big difference maker.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for having us. And if anybody's looking for a different career, please let us know. We're hiring.
And where would they go?
They would go to Port NOLA's website, portnola.com, click on the Harbor Police link, and it'll bring you straight to our page.
All righty. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Have a safe and prosperous Mardi Gras, and we'll get yet another event behind us, right?
Absolutely. You do the same. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Chief. We'll be right back. That is Chief Melanie Montrose from the Harbor Police Agency. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. You've heard me say for a couple of days, because I know that this issue has been mounting, it hasn't been reported on quite a bit, and that's the future of Medicaid. You will recall that I've said over and over and over again that you campaign in poetry and you govern in prose. And the poetry part is that you have this flowery, aspirational language that's gone on. And, you know, you're making all kinds of different promises. And when you talk about having to make these actual cuts, things get a little bit more tense, direct. And that's where we are today. There's been a lot of contradictory comments about what's going to happen. In fact, on a Fox News interview with the president on Tuesday evening, he talked about embracing the House bill, which in that bill, there are huge cuts to Medicaid. And I warned you about the fiscal position we would be in here in the state of Louisiana if that goes away. Obviously, part of that plan is to help pay for the energy and border agenda, and whether or not there's any tax changes that are going to be proposed by the Trump administration. Now, what a lot of people don't recognize is that there were a number of red states under the Affordable Care Act that actually expanded Medicaid, this state being one of them. Its voter base has become increasingly reliant on that program, which provides health care to lower-income Americans of all ages. Plain and simple. This is going to be something that's going to have political implications, not to mention so many other different types of implications. The Trump administration has been really vague on how this is going to work out, and what you're starting to see are a number of both Senate Republicans first, because they're recognizing the delicate balance here, and they're looking at some of the provisions that don't really outline exactly what's going to happen to Medicaid. And they're starting to kind of a little bit of buck the system and articulate their exasperation and concern. In fact, our own Senator John Kennedy, in an interview, acknowledged the need for more guidance from the administration at this juncture. He says, we'll sit down and talk with the president about our specific cuts if we decide to make them, and we'll work them out. This is a reality according to many articles, one I'm looking at now that was reported in Politico, that Republicans are still not on in the same place, I should say, as it relates to how they're going to be able to pay for their reconciliation bill. You've heard from a bunch of Senate Republicans saying that exact same thing. And Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, in an interview, said most of the proposals for cost savings are making sure the states pay their fair share of Medicaid. I mean, different, but every bit as much important friction point. And it will be interesting to see how this plays out with this finger pointing as to whether or not the states are taking on enough of their fair share in the funding and financing of Medicaid. And as we learn more information about this, we will report out to you because this is going to have a very big impact in Louisiana. Per capita, we, I think, are in the top 10 states in the country utilizing or as it relates to the number of Medicaid recipients. And that highlights the importance of this program for us. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Folks, in a 12 o'clock hour, we'll visit with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. We'll talk about a number of issues. Hans von Spakovsky, senior legal fellow at the Heritage, joins us to talk about DOGE. AGs from 14 states are challenging the authority of Elon Musk and DOGE. And coming out after the top of the hour news break, we will visit with Meg Ferris, WWL-TV medical reporter, about her new hour-long in-depth talk show podcast about health and lifestyle issues and why this works as a better medium to dig deep into these issues. So we'll be right back after the top of the hour news break with Meg Ferris. Stay with us.